Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona. You know, there's been a lot of uncertainty in the EB5 program, or at least there has been if you've been reading some of the clickbait titles you've seen on social media and Google.
Oh, yes. There's been all kinds of articles going on. You know how much the press like to focus on the negative, Mark. Everybody's jittery over the EB5 program. Will it still be around? Will it make this current government, et cetera, et cetera? But you know what? Today, we are about to put our listeners' minds at ease. We have two people who are, one, I would say, the authority in the area.
Oh, you could say it. I'll say it. They're the authority. And they're going to be explaining to us why the EB5 program is here to stay. Today on the show, we have Michael Hohmeyer. Michael practices in the area of general business, corporate securities, transactional, and business financing law. Michael has worked on over 400 EB5 matters, representing a large number of regional centers and security issuers in the EB5 program. And Michael is also a member of the EB5 Securities Roundtable. He's joined with us today by Bob Kraft. Bob is the CEO and chairman of First Pathway Partners and has been reelected by his regional center peers for a fourth term as the president of ISUA Board of Directors. Sorry, Bob, you got that fourth time in a row. He's committed himself to driving economic growth and job creation impact throughout southeastern Wisconsin and championed those best practices across the United States. Gentlemen, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Yes, thank you indeed. Great to be with you.
Bob, it's wonderful to see that you're still the president of IIUSA. And it's also equally wonderful to see how much involvement IIUSA have in this EB5 reauthorization process.
Thank you, Mona. IIUSA has been very involved. And as you know, I've been involved with the organization since 2006. I actively became involved as a regional center in 2008, but even prior to getting into the business, I joined the organization so I could better understand the business and the issues facing the industry.
Yeah, that's why you'll be so pertinent in answering my questions, as will you, Michael. Michael, you're one of the members of the Securities Roundtable. Can you explain what the Securities Roundtable is and what you do?
Yeah, sure. The Securities Roundtable, the EB5 Securities Roundtable, is a grouping of 11 or 12 securities lawyers who are active in the EB5 space, do a lot of practice in the industry. There's crossover with IIUSA. Some of us are members of both organizations. I've been a member of IIUSA since 2010. And the Securities Roundtable was established around 2014 when those of us who are securities lawyers who are active working in what is essentially an immigration program, nevertheless found that we were able to provide a lot of information and experience and education from a really vital perspective that sometimes could be viewed as almost a sideline, but it's not, because the EB5 program, although it's an immigration program, is also an immigration investment program. And of course, the securities lawyers practice in the area of the laws governing those kinds of investments, whether EB5 or otherwise. And so the Securities Roundtable, the 11 or 12 of us have been involved since about 2014, 2015, when the industry was exploding and Congress was first exploring serious improvements to the EB5 program, including the integrity measures. We got involved to try to contribute another voice, a securities law focused voice, especially on topics having to do with integrity, which really at their heart have to do with securities compliance and rooting out fraud from the EB5 industry.
Well, I know you've been giving excellent advice to all at this point, but before we get into the new bill, you guys know we are getting inundated with worried investors, investors who are panicking that the EB5 program will not be reauthorized. Let's take it bit by bit. The first thing which everyone is talking about is why has it been decoupled from the normal type of legislation it's been added to, and why we've seen a continuation over the years. And will this decoupling mean that this is the end of EB-5? Bob?
Yeah, actually, I think the decoupling is a real positive for the industry. As everyone that follows the industry knows, in the past, the EB-5 program has been attached to the spending bills, which really support the government fiscal year to fiscal year. And we've had extensions just riding along on that bill, while a number of the big supporters of the program have tried to, unsuccessfully to this point, move improvements, specifically addressing investor concerns and investor protections to make the industry better for everybody. And it actually protects the regional center industry. So integrity reforms is something that Senator Leahy and Senator Grassley have been working hard for many years. Unfortunately, the omnibus process, which is the government spending bill process, only requires one senator to object to an attachment, if you will, of a new program. And there have been some people that did not want to see changes to the program for various reasons. And some of them are well-founded. Some of them are self-serving.
Bob, what is the objective of congressional decoupling? You said it was a good thing. How?
Well, yeah, let me explain what decoupling is. Actually, all it really means is that we now have a standalone bill that will be presented in the House and then in the Senate, and all members will have to be heard, vote publicly, whether they support or not support. And the good news is that we have very broad-based bipartisan support. So,
well, that is good news. Yeah.
It's good news. It's good news. It's really a good thing. So decoupling sounds kind of scary, but it's really actually an excellent strategic move by Grassley Leahy.
I would chime in to add, there's an opportunity that flows along with the risk of decoupling. Everyone looks at the risk side of decoupling, saying, well, EB-5 standalone, it's going to be thumbs up or thumbs down when Congress votes if it decides to go that far. But in the past, by not being decoupled, EB-5 has gone along for the ride. It's a safe ride, but every extension's been for just a year, essentially. Now there's an opportunity to extend the EB-5 program for 5 years if the standalone bill is passed. In other words, it's now going to get the attention again that it kind of stopped getting once it was attached to the budget. And it was just along for the ride every time, well, the government's got to pass the budget. And no one was really paying much attention to EB-5. Yeah, there's greater risk when people are now focused again on EB-5 like they haven't been since 2015. But there's also this opportunity to get a 5-year extension and to get other improvements to the program that's going to allow it to get back on its feet.
So 1-year bridge into a 5-year somewhat certainty?
Perhaps. Yeah.
You know, Michael, the Economic Times of India actually brought that up. I think they quoted, well, the person that they quoted stated that the decoupling was really a major event. So I kind of agree with you. But Bob, are we allowed to mention some of the bipartisan support that we have?
Well, I mean, obviously, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy's office, you know, are supportive. They're driving the bill. But we also have been told that a number of other senators want to be co-authors of the program. So they're in the process of signing those people up. They're very prominent in both parties. And we really haven't gotten any pushback from anybody. So you could speculate as to who it is. You know, I'd hate to publicly say before that happens, but it's all really good news.
I'd like to second what Bob is saying. I think one example of a sea change in congressional attitude toward EB-5 is Senator Grassley himself.
Yeah.
Who's never fond of EB-5. He saw it as a vehicle only for economic advancement of big states and not rural states. And he was an opponent of EB-5. He is now a supporter if, assuming the industry gets behind the integrity provisions, he's now saying if the integrity provisions get adopted, which the industry does support, as does the EB-5 Securities Roundtable, by the way, then now Grassley has moved from being an opponent of the extension of EB-5, indeed, the entire regional center program, indeed, the entire EB-5 program, for that matter, to now being a supporter.
Michael made an important point on the, you know, riding along an omnibus. Sure, we many times got 1-year extensions, but we often got month extensions, multiple month extensions, and it's been so choppy, and that's not good for the program. So, you know, knowing going forward we'll have a 5 to 6 year runway is huge for the industry, for everybody that practices with it, and for the investors. It gives surety and stability, and it's just it's a really, really big win. So yes, there's a little bit of a risk, but really I'm not concerned about the risk at all. I think we're definitely going to get there.
So, you know, we haven't really had a program, Mark, yet about Senator Grassley's and Leahy's integrity reform bill, because we were waiting to see what else was going to materialize. And here, both of you have been very much involved, Bob, you and Michael, through the roundtable. Can you give our listeners any update on where this bill is?
Yeah, in fact, we had discussions this week with those offices, and they are finalizing. There are a couple minor tweaks, but they weren't significant. They were more word changes than anything, and they hope to drop a bill or present a bill within the next 2 weeks. So it's been pretty much done for a while. To their credit, and I guess to the credit of IIUSA, we've created a very, very strong working relationship with those offices. They trust IIUSA because we've been consistent in our position to improve the program, to support the investor, and make the program better for everybody. So they called us just last week and said, we got a couple other things we'd like to run by you. And, you know, good for them. I mean, they could have just gone with what they had, and it makes it actually a little bit better. You know, they're minor changes, but they were being thoughtful about the industry, which kudos to IIUSA and to our lobbying group and our executive management team.
You know, Bob, we took the same approach from the perspective of the Securities Roundtable. I mean, integrity at its core has to do with prevention of fraud. And essentially, it tracks along with what securities attorneys are responsible for assisting their clients involved in EB-5 and outside EB-5 as well, for that matter, in making sure that when those businesses are offering investment opportunities, whether they're EB-5-based investment opportunities or other, that they are in compliance in offering those investment opportunities is done in compliance with the federal and state securities laws. And Congress has been very interested in making sure that there is improved integrity in EB-5. The Securities Roundtable has stepped up to say integrity provisions and securities compliance is exactly what we do on a day in and day out basis in and out of EB-5. And we're happy to contribute to looking at what the Congress, the staff of the senators in particular, has proposed for integrity improvements, and helping offer constructive feedback, collaborative feedback, with an eye toward avoiding conflicts with the existing securities and financial regulation laws, such as Dodd-Frank, making sure that there aren't contradictory definitions, that we're harmonizing the legislation to avoid confusion, ambiguity, and vagueness, and making sure that businesses really can be held to account, because there's no way they can't understand what it is that is being asked of them, and what it is that is being asked of them is fair and reasonable. And our participation has been, I think, favorably received by the Senate staffers on top of or in companion with the offering input by IIUSA to accomplish exactly that.
Yeah, you know, Michael and Bob, Senator Grassley got his way when it came to the TEA, and we have been asked if this particular bill will do anything with the TEA, and we've been saying no, the TEA is done. I don't think there is going to be any more changes with regards to either the 900,000 threshold or the TEA changes. Do either of you want to shed a thought on that?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we've heard the same thing, but
yeah, me too.
That horse is out of the barn. I mean, it is not going to change. Those are set, and Grassley and Leahy both feel very strongly about it, as does the majority of Congress.
And has IIUSA expressed to Senator Grassley's office that we will challenge it or we're fine with it? What's the situation, Bob?
Yeah, we've been supportive of it. You know, one of the issues and the driver for the TEA change was some of the gerrymandering that took place under the old program, which was legal. And credit to the organizations that figured out how to link census tracts to qualify a project that wouldn't have qualified under the vision that was originally established in 1990 and then 92 when the Regional Center Pilot Program was established. You know, good for them. I mean, they did it legally and they got state approvals, but that was not the original intent of the program. So this is Grassley's attempt to force a more even distribution of economic investment across the country into rural areas and into city areas where money is actually needed and jobs are needed.
Michael, do the integrity measures mean that we're going to have less regional centers? Or is it going to be harder for people if they want to put their own project up? Will that make a difference?
Yes. I think the answer is broadly yes to both of those questions. I think that this is a serious game, and the point of the changes that Congress is asking the industry to sign on board with, and that the industry is signing on board with, are to improve integrity and offer greater protection to investors while still allowing businesses reasonably to accomplish their business goals. The idea is to enhance and improve the EB-5 program, not kill it, not end it, not cripple it. And the idea is it's not a game for children, and people who are not ready to play a fairly sophisticated game should not get in. If they are, and if they agree to comply with reasonable requirements that are being added to these businesses by this legislation, then Congress is saying we are going to be enhancing the EB-5 program greatly.
That's a great quote, Michael. I'm going to quote you. This is not a game for children. We're going to tell all of our clients that as well.
But it is a game that adults can play. Yeah. Absolutely. And by the way, I'm not always fond of making the statement about games. This is not a game at all, as a matter of fact. But using the colloquial expression, you know, this is something that people can do if they're serious and if they're willing to do work and they're willing to be transparent to their investors and to their government.
You know, I'd like both of you to say just a word, but to all of these newspapers who are harping on the fact that thousands of people filed just before the deadline changed. And because none of those people have green cards yet, if the EB-5 program is not reauthorized in June, what would happen to them? Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell them not to be concerned. The program has had in the past a couple times when it was suspended and then brought back. And that is not going to happen this time. And even if it did, those investors will be protected. The current administration has a totally different attitude about immigration and protection for those individuals that want to come to the United States. So we've heard nothing, you know, that should concern investors.
Michael, do you know anything about whether or not we're going to get more visas from Biden's immigration reform bill?
Well, gee, that's a tougher question for a securities lawyer than it is for an immigration attorney.
I'll help you in on that one. We will.
Good. See, and you know, I have to tell you though, for what it's worth, and maybe it would be interesting for your listeners to consider, I have to say, and this I think goes to the possibility that this bill will actually get passed by Republicans and Democrats. You know, Congress is fairly evenly divided right now. And I will say that the EB-5 program was never attacked by the prior administration, obviously not by this one. It's new and it's not about to be. But I mean, the EB-5 program has, through its lifetime, won majority support from politicians of both parties.
And at a good point.
Where both parties are pretty much 50-50, and outside listeners, potential investors, are listening in and saying, well, do I have to worry about what happens if one senator changes party or if five congressmen, you know, suddenly become Republican? I mean, is the world of EB-5 going to change? I don't think so. EB-5 is immigration by investment. And the point of it being that people of different politics on immigration can still support this program because it is based not on being more or less permissive in those other areas of immigration, but it's actually based on people making an investment that creates new U.S. jobs. And that is why I believe majority support has always been there from Republicans and Democrats. It was difficult to corral the cats, these political animals, in both parties to actually pay attention to EB-5, especially during the omnibus years when they didn't really have to.
Yeah.
But now they know they have to. If they don't do something about EB-5, it could go away. So now their feet are being held to the fire. And I think it's important to keep in mind that historically there's always been a majority support from both parties and both sides of the political divide in this country.
I agree.
Otherwise pretty deep, but in the area of EB-5, it doesn't seem as deep at all.
I agree.
Yeah, and Michael makes a great point. In the past, when it rolled along as part of the omnibus spending package, you really only needed one person to object.
It's true.
And that's been the problem. And we have a very strong majority that supports the program. And that was the reason why it was moved to a standalone bill to get the reforms that are required to protect the investor and the industry and to get this thing authorized for 5 to 6 years. It's a good thing. It's a great thing. So one vote, if there was one person who objected, it's still going to pass.
Bob, are we going to see something happening before June? Do we have to wait till June?
My understanding is that this bill is going to be out fairly soon. And as I said, within the next couple of weeks, language is all done. So I know that they're trying to get through some of the hearings that are going on right now with the appointments the Biden administration has put forward, and hearings are taking up a lot of time. But regardless of that, I think we'll see action on it this spring.
Oh, wonderful. Michael, we have to have you back to discuss some of these integrity measures which are there, and in particular, some of these issues which involve redeployment, perhaps.
Happy to. These are all key issues, and I think that it's encouraging to see that what the senators and their staff have apparently agreed to is an enforcement regimen that says reasonable oversight is what is going to be required of regional centers and other participants in the EB-5 program. They are not imposing securities issuer compliance obligations on someone who, frankly, doesn't deserve to have them imposed on them under the securities laws. And instead, they're saying, look, we have this new participant in an investment offering in this EB-5 industry called a regional center. And how can we ask that additional player to exercise a reasonable business-like form of oversight over what's going on so that if there is a problem, if there is some misbehavior, that it can be caught early, nipped in the bud, and some of this major damage that's happened with some of the bad guys who have gotten involved in EB-5, like they get involved in selling investment opportunities outside EB-5 too.
Yeah.
So that some of this misbehavior can be caught earlier and stopped. And I think that this is a reasonable set of obligations that Congress is considering imposing on regional centers, and not an impossible mountain for them to climb.
I have a question for you, Michael. Traditionally, under the Democrats, the SEC tends to be more of an enforcer, or it seems to be stricter. Is that just a viewpoint, or does that actually happen?
It's difficult to say. I think it's fair to assume that the SEC is always watching. And if they are informed, or if they discover on their own about misbehavior by a business that is taking investor funds and behaving badly with those funds, the government is always going to be interested in investigating and, if necessary, civilly prosecuting and even criminally prosecuting the bad guys in order to protect investors, including foreign investors and immigrant investors, not just American citizens. It's important to keep that in mind. And I think it's a very dangerous bet for anybody to think that the SEC is not always watching. They are always watching. They are essentially a law enforcement agency just in the area of investments and finance. And so they will always be there to protect EB-5 investors, as they should. This legislation clarifies what regional centers are going to be asked to do as a condition of being allowed to participate in the program. And I'm pleased to see that it's a pretty reasonable set of obligations that the Congress is looking to impose, and that certainly the EB-5 Securities Roundtable backing up IIUSA believes is good legislation that will benefit the country, investors, and the industry as well.
Bob, I know IIUSA have been the forefront whenever the congressional people want to ask our opinion. Have you had any competition from other groups, or have been working together with them?
Yeah, well, in the past, we attempted to work with a couple different groups. And I would say right now we are united, except for perhaps one splinter group, and I won't name them. But they really have lost a lot of their influence just because of some of the positions they've taken, which are contrary to the majority of Congress. There was a question asked earlier that you asked, Mona, I believe, with respect to regional center participation. We see fewer regional centers, and Michael kind of opined on that. I would add, and it kind of fits with what's happening right now, which is a good thing. The EB-5 industry really one way to look at it is we're kind of at a maturation point where, you know, it was a little bit of the Wild West for a period of time where we had over 800 some registered regional centers in the United States. Everybody got into the business right after the financial crisis, or many people did, because they thought it was easy money.
Yeah.
And not that those people were dishonest, but they really didn't know how complicated this business is.
Yeah.
And a lot of investors got hurt, and a lot of communities got hurt. And I mean, that's really what this is kind of a reining in to make sure that serious players, because this is a very serious business with huge consequences if it's not properly practiced, to the investors, to communities, to developers. I mean, it could be a mess, and it has been a mess in some cases. That's what this is all about. It's a recognition that this is a huge economic driver. It's a great opportunity for people around the world to invest in the United States, enter the United States legally and in a relatively short period of time, and benefit communities where those projects are. But in order to be successful at it, you have to have people that are following the laws, that understand the business, and some of the changes will put a little additional pressure on regional centers. But people that operate properly and know what they're doing, have good counsel like Michael and other attorneys, and are in this 100%, are fine with it. And that's why IUSA supports it, because it'll really improve the whole industry for everybody that participates in it.
No, I totally agree.
So it sounds like, all the inflammatory clickbait titles aside and the uncertainty that many of us are still feeling, it sounds like there's a general consensus here that EB-5 is here to stay. Are there any other guarantees you can give us?
Well, the one thing we can't guarantee are the votes, but I can tell you, you know, both Bob and I and IIUSA and the roundtable, I know I can speak for my colleagues, saying, you know, we all strongly support this is encouraging if it goes through, and we think it should, and we think that it has a good chance of it. It's going to be very positive for investors. It's going to be very positive for businesses. It's going to be very, very positive for communities. You know, it's hard not to be hopeful and see the glass half full when you're facing so much positive, not perfect, but there's so much positive direction in this.
The times require it.
Agreed. There is a lot of positive direction, which I think we can all agree is a strong indicator that EB-5 is here to stay. Bob Kraft and Michael Hohlmeier, thank you so much for coming on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for hosting us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.